Yakmala, Yakmala. It's time again for the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I'm Stan Adu, and I am joined by my partners, Jim.
Hey, that's...
Hey, there, Jim.
I'm so glad to be here. I was in the middle of doing some extra side work. I'm just getting the octagon ready for this episode. I'm excited to get the scores in, but we've got a lot of talking about the movie to come first.
And Jack Hall. Jack's not here either. Damn it.
Jack's gone. Oh shit, that's me.
He's just admiring his 8-pack.
Sorry. Hi.
All right. Brad Doc, are you here?
Brad,
damn it,
Brad,
is Brad not here again?
Did you text him to make sure that he was going to be here?
He might pop up later in the episode.
I texted him, but he didn't get back to me.
Nick Boxer, I've heard you here, my friend.
Greetings and salutations, my lovelies.
All right, so we've got...
Hey, we never got your last name. What's your last name, Stan?
Stan Adu. That's my last name, Adu.
Adu, okay. That's cool.
Much ado about everything. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's not cool.
Welcome to... This is season one, and it's episode 2 of Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Last episode, we dealt with the classic Gymkata. And this episode, as we of course teased on our first episode, we are going to talk about the King of the Kickboxers, of course, Karate Tiger 4 and No Retreat, No Surrender 4. It's all the same damn thing.
How could we could talk about all that in one episode?
I know. It's like three movies in one. It's so great. So who is going to start us off by telling us about the King of the Kickboxers?
I think Ben should do it. Or Brad, sorry.
He's not here,
oh,
man.
Right. Oh, okay, I'll do it.
I don't blame you for getting his name wrong. If he's never here, how are we supposed to learn it?
Now...
Well, you've never even met him, have you, Jack?
No, never. Before I'm starting to not like him, though.
Before I jump into Nick's soapbox, I have to put a little proviso on this. I had to grab some dates to explain.
Wednesday, I thought it was called...
Nick's Soapboxer.
Soapboxer.
Nick Boxer's Soapboxer.
Okay. Yeah.
Just say it with me, Nick. Nick Boxer, Soapboxer.
Nick Boxer, Soapboxer. Okay. Now, I had to grab some dates from Wikipedia to summarize this film. Because, let's face it, this film, I think, is rather plot-heavy. And I had a tough time sort of sorting this all out of my head. So, King of the Kickboxers. In 1981, Jake Donahue is in Thailand accompanying his brother, Sean, as he competes and wins a kickboxing match against the current Thai champion. Ambushed after the match by a mysterious black man and his gang of thugs, seemingly to protect the purity of Thai kickboxing, Sean loses his life and Jake is left with a scar. Cut forward 9 years. Jake is a New York undercover cop who plays by his own rules. After a successful, if unorthodox, drug bust, Jake's captain feels he needs to get out of New York City. So he loans Jake out to help Interpol sort out some sort of problem they're having with the film industry. Although initially reluctant, Jake eventually agrees once he spots Khan, one of the leader of the gang who killed his brother. Once in Thailand, Jake rejects all help from the local Interpol and starts basically picking fights in order to get recruited into what we now know is a snuff film ring. Soon realizing that his skills aren't up to it, he must find a mentor, get recruited into the snuff film ring, and, by the way, along the way, he falls in love. This is a classic. This is classic. I have seen this film over 100 times.
Now, are you suggesting that you've seen The King of the Kickboxers over 100 times, or that you've seen this general plot over 100 times?
I have seen No Retreat, No Surrender for over 100 times. This was my first video cassette while I was in university. You know, a young Nicholas. I was going by Nicholas back then. I wasn't manly enough to be a Nick. And I had one VHS, and I was alone in a new city, and I watched it about twice a week. So I know this film. This film is awesome. It's got me through some rough times. It made me a fan of white dragons and black dragons.
Too. I forgot to say that.
Yeah, this season's called what, Stan? You suck as a host. What's this season called?
Screw you, Jackhole.
That's a good title. Season one.
All right, this season is called White Dragon, All-American Ninjas.
All right, I just want to say, Nick, as you do a summary, it's different than me. Because this is how I would have done it. I approach it like this, going, okay, so this guy's a kickboxer. He's in Thailand, and he wins. And I think he was supposed to throw the fight or something. So this big guy jumps him and jumps on his neck and kills him and then beats up his little brother who was there and loves him. But his little brother goes and learns martial arts then, and he's in and becomes a cop, but not so he can get revenge on him. He apparently has no intention to go back there until they say to him, hey, you should go to Thailand. And then he realizes he can go there and he's going to run into the guy. And then, so he's going to run into the guy and he's told, no, this guy has beat up your brother. He's really tough. And he finds out that he needs more training because the people in Thailand are better kickboxers than the people in America. And so he starts getting trained by a guy who almost beat the big guy that killed his brother. And then he gets trained, bones a woman and has a big fight at the end. Oh yeah. And he's also a cop and there's some snuff film thing going on.
See, that right. Actually tells me nothing.
All right, Stan. Stan, now I what I want you to do is also summarize the movie, but try to make it even longer than Jack and Nick did.
I can get longer than Nick. That's for sure. All right. I want to get right into this.
So as you're saying, Jack, there, like, it's. As he explain the opening scene there where he wins the competition and then he gets killed for some reason.
because no white guy is supposed to win the Thai kickboxing belt.
Black guys are okay.
No, he doesn't say no white guy. He says no American.
Oh, and it's no American, sir.
Says that no American should win this. Yes, so why is he in charge of making sure that no American wins
this? He's acting. His name is Khan. He is acting, my friend.
Okay, so here's one of my things. I'm supposed to do I'm supposed to do trivia. So this, of course, Billy Blanks plays the character. Sorry, Billy Blanks, a former world karate champion. He's got black belts in Taekwondo and five other forms of martial arts. He's the creator of Tai Bo. His estimated net worth now is $30 million because Tai Bo was so incredibly successful around the turn of the century. And in this movie, his character, Blank's character of Khan, number one, was an inspiration for carrying the character of DJ in the video game series Street Fighter II in 1993. And, why can't I find this really good?
I can't find it. Wow, you're right. You're
unbelievable.
I might suck as a host, but see,
I've got something for you, Jack.
Oh, yeah.
I got something for you. There's an interesting fact about Khan. His mother is Indonesian.
That's it. I saw him put it down.
Ooh. Is his mother? Like, is there any relation to Princess Rubali from Gymkhana?
Interesting story about Khan.
yeah. No. This explains why. Why he,
you keep looking, and we'll talk amongst ourselves. So there's the competition that he's not supposed to win. Now, and that's like the opening 10 minutes of the movie. The competition itself is also never mentioned again. Like, it has no bearing on anything else. And Khan goes from being in charge of that, of who wins that competition. And it's a bit weird because he's already won the competition and then he's told that no American was ever going to win it. So it's like a little, the horse is out of the barn at that point. And then he breaks the medal, so I guess no one wins it. Is that like, I guess that's the moral of the story, is like, if they can't have it, no one will.
It was very confusing in that fact that, I mean, obviously it's not a sanctioned belt or anything like that. There's no like WBA or anything. Yeah, he just
breaks it half, throws it into the fire.
According to producer Keith W. Strandberg, the murderously anti-American Khan is in fact half American. Khan's untold Black backstory includes a father who was an American serviceman and abandoned Khan and his Thai mother when Khan was young, sparking his feelings of hatred towards Americans. Fuck you guys.
I love it.
See, obviously that's why he's pissed, is that
now it all makes sense. And you thought there was there's a great backstory there. They didn't put it in the movie.
That is in the movie.
No, I'm sure they handed everyone pamphlets on the way into the movie, you know, to explain this, you know, required reading before you can see this movie.
It's in the scorecard for the film.
Do you think that people research this on Wikipedia before going to see it in 1990?
Well, I could recommend that they should.
Thank you. Well, I mean, pre-internet, so you had to mail away for information about a movie before you went to see it. Unless it was covered in the trains.
Was this an Encyclopedia Britannica?
Awesome. So, Nick, I do have a quick question for Nick. You said you've seen this film 100 times, and I actually don't doubt that. in your head, when you think of this movie, what is it called?
Actually, King of the Kickboxers, because my video cassette of it, I had the box for King of the Kickboxers. Okay. But the film was labeled No Retreat, No Surrender 4.
That's awesome.
That actually adds
I love
to the
it.
Experience. That's like amazing. That would help.
Well, honestly. I'll get on to one of my interesting facts I do have then. You see, it's because Keith W. Strandberg, who produced it, he's a great man. Because he wrote No Retreat, No Surrender 1-3. Nice. And helped cast Jean-Claude Van Damme in the first one. He also wrote and produced two other movies that are on our list. Little spoiler here because they haven't been announced. Maybe I'll wait. Maybe I won't. No, I'll tell you. American Shaolin and Blood Moon.
Oh, nice.
So, he's a great man. And I'd love to like sit down and get a beer with this guy.
Who would? Right. Where do we go from here? Like, I don't. The character of Khan is amazing. Like, he makes.
You know, the thing is that the acting on Billy Blanks' face, like, it's just like, and like everything like pops out and he just looks like he's going to take a massive shit.
Like, this is so true.
Can we call it acting? Isn't it just some sort of, you know, Japanese art of kabuki face making?
I put up.
Does that matter?
I put a picture up on the Kung Fu Electric. Great. I put a picture up on the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo Instagram of Billy Blanks from this film making. I think that kabuki is a great analogy for what he's doing.
I like the idea of saying that he looks like he's about to take a shit through the whole movie. The whole movie is him with his teeth gritted and his face like.
And his dentist must have made a killing off of this movie.
You're like, he's either, I don't know if he's trying to keep it in or he's constipated, but one or the other is happening here.
Yeah, I think everyone in this movie did go to some sort of intensity school of acting. Because everything is very urgent in this film.
When somebody dies, it doesn't matter who it is, but somebody dies and somebody mourns. And when they mourn, it's just like, And there's always these pained, not real expressions on their face.
Dude, if you were filming this movie, you would have a pain expression too. Are you kidding me? I would. Like, holy fuck. Like,
well, but that's because I would be spending, you know, like 2 hours a day with like Billy Blanks's foot right beside my head while they shoot 10 seconds of
that's my favorite. That's the opening scene. That opening scene where his brother gets killed, and then like the 14, 15 year old kid, it's just a close up, and they go to this. They do flashbacks on this like 3 or 4 times. And, like, just
like Billy any good Blank, movie does.
Billy Blank's feet just kicking his shit out of this little kid. He looks like he's really nailing him. Just boom, boom, boom. These little, it's like this, it's almost like a shoulder cam. Like, I don't know how to describe this cinematography.
Foot POV.
Yeah. Just like a POV.
Or leg POV, it's, I it's guess. Like
if his dick had a POV. This
yeah. is like, crotch POV. Crotch cam.
As he sits there slapping this kid, it's hilarious. And you're like, there's no reason. And he just gets there on his shoulders and he hits him. And you're like, why isn't he falling? He's up there for like 15 seconds just floating. Like just kicking him back and forth.
Now, I think that was just to emphasize the fact that Jake is given a scar, which I've never actually seen, but they talk about it quite often.
But no, because if you look at every major scene that involves some major kick, their foot is up there and it stays there for a good like couple of beats before it actually connects.
Yeah, but that's
like, oh, bam.
I mean, that's because Jean-Claude Van did that, and every movie of this era does that.
Yeah, well, of course, but it's still very funny. One of my favorite moments is the fact that when we're first introduced to the adult Jake Donahue, is that. He's undercover as a cop, and it's just like, oh, you know, I'm a badass.
That's a weird scene.
That's such a weird scene.
It's just like, starts talking shit to the drug dealer.
Dude, that's the thing, that this Jake Donahue character, I couldn't tell if the character is supposed to be a dick, or if Lauren Avedon, or however you pronounce his name, is actually just a dick. Because this guy is Avedon. Lauren Avedon,
yeah.
A fifth degree black belt in Taekwondo and eighth Dan black belt in Hapkido. You're welcome. I couldn't tell if he's like the character's a dick or if this guy's just a dick, because this guy was such a dick. Like, he's just like the most unlikable, arrogant, cocky little son of a bitch. And
I get the results.
At the beginning, the opening scene where he's, you know, fighting and getting the drug dealers, where he like throws away his gun and refuses to call in for backup or whatever, and so he can beat up all these guys. I like the part where he reveals he's a cop so that they'll want to fight him. And the one guy goes, I knew it, a fucking cop. And he goes, no fucking, just a plain cop.
Move as a cop in the undercover cop in this movie seems to be yelling he's a cop.
I like the fact that he said I'm a cop, and the boss of the gang was just like, no, you're not. You're oh, that's funny. You know, no, totally a cop. Wow, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, then he goes, yeah, I knew it. You're a fucking cop. No fucking involved. Just a cop.
That's a great line. That's a classic line.
Did you notice he flies into a rage anytime anyone suggests he do anything, you know, police-like?
Yes.
There's a great exchange. Keep going.
I mean... You know, he gets to Thailand, he meets with his handler, doesn't hear the plan, and tells this guy to fuck off, he's going to do it his way.
That doesn't give a rat's ass about the plan, ever.
So after his weird undercover thing, his captain says, we want you to go to Thailand, and he says, no way, I'm not going to Thailand, takes the videos, goes home, sees Khan. And then his captain says, we found someone else to go to Thailand. He's like, I'm going to Thailand. You're sending me to Thailand. Don't tell me I'm not going
to
Thailand.
So here's another interesting fact, though, because that character was played by, that's his name. His name was Richard Jekyll. And the scenes were shot completely independent of each other on different days. So neither one knew the other guy was the guy they were talking to. They knew one knew the other guy was the guy starring in it until they saw the movie.
Awesome.
So that might be part of what's going on there.
That is awesome. That does explain so much about the delivery in that scene.
Yes. There's no other actor to play off of.
And these guys needed actors to play off of because
I have another question. So there's he fights the guys at the kickboxing school, I guess, to get his street cred. And there's the guy that, you know, is like what like the suspicious guy from the school. And then the suspicious guy befriends him halfway through the film and tells him where to find the master.
You know, that guy was the best actor in the entire movie.
He is, but he never appears again.
Never appears again. Never. Okay. That's one of the amazing things in it. But one of the other great things in it is that I love that the guy, I can't remember who he is playing the master. He's sitting there, and once he's met his woman and he has his time, and there's a point where he goes, crazy old man, because this guy's sort of like a drunk, crazy old man. And I looked it up because he looked about the same age. Yeah, they're 3 years apart.
He's kind of like a drunken master kind of character.
I actually found that refreshing. You know, all these movies, you got the old drunken master dude, having a young dude in there that you know.
Yeah, but he calls him old. That's my problem with it. If he didn't call him old, it would be fine. But he's like that old man.
It would stretch believability even more because this guy did fight Khan. That was his whole reason for seeking him out.
At some point.
He
called him old.
Maybe that was 6 weeks ago.
Sometime between Khan being the protector of this award that he then burns and doing snuff movies. He fought him.
Let's talk about the snuff movie scene. Somebody.
I want to ask one question though about Prang, who, you know, because he showed when Jake shows up, Prang is drunk.
Right.
But then he goes on to talk about like, oh, you were just faking being drunk. But then later on, he starts to say, like, is he actually drinking at that point? Or did he, you know, because other people then refer to him as a drunk. So does he fake it for everybody? Or is he actually drunk?
I assume he fakes it for everybody.
I think a combination works. I don't think you have to explain that too much. That works. I had more of a problem with the monkey hangs around with. I mean, I did start to wonder if, you know, it was a consensual relationship he had with the monkey.
Oh, man.
It's his ward. Anyways, you wanted to talk about the snuff film.
Say something about the snuff film, please. Because I like the part where he's sitting there and he gets cut, and the guy turns around. This first guy that they're in the snuff scene. All these guys are attacking him with knives, and he gets cut. And he turns around and goes, "Hey, he hit me." I'm like, "Really?"
Yeah, it's good action, and I like the fact that there's the director who's telling them what to do, but then there's the producer who's really making all the money off of this, obviously, and he's really in charge. I don't actually know why he's not just directing, why he needs the director as a go-between, because the director really doesn't add anything.
The director and two producers, one of which looks like John Walters.
Yeah, the whole making of those movies doesn't really make a lot of sense, because what, like, is the movie just that scene? Like, is that the whole movie?
I think it is.
Like, the whole movie is just like the 5 minutes that they kill this guy.
And do they change the sets? Because the dead woman is found during the filming of another scene.
Well, I mean, obviously, they're killing people. They have to go to different places, you know, that, because if they just leave them, then you can't go back.
Yeah, but I mean, the answer probably shouldn't be, well, we'll just throw a tarp over it and film the next scene.
Well, if you look at the one producer, I mean, who gets to you know, sit on a couch with the Thai girls and be fed grapes.
There's a surprising amount of people that are totally fine with making these snuff films. It's a lot of people around who are very, very just totally casual about the making of the snuff film.
the snuff film, it just seems so random, and I'm not 100% sure that it was necessary for the story. I'm pretty sure that you could have just said, oh, Khan holds this title now, and he's not a very nice guy. But of course, then you wouldn't have the whole reason and be able to see all the producers, and maybe more to the point, you wouldn't be able to have the bamboo cage that they fought in at the very end, which I loved.
You know what they could have done?
Andy was awesome.
What they could have done is had people competing for some sort of award.
actually, while watching this film this time around, I was actually thinking maybe the snuff film angle was added because Jean-Claude Van Damme came out with Kickboxer and the story was just too similar. Mm. So they had to throw this extra element in. Because other than the snuff film, it is the exact plot of Kickboxer.
Yeah, yeah, could be.
I'm not so 100% sure the same guy didn't write them.
But you know, I was one of the interesting things was that there was a ever so brief moment of nudity, and it was
good for you.
Absolutely pointless.
So here's the story behind that
character was pointless.
The story behind
a hooker who falls in love with this guy after.
No, she was an actress who got. You know, mixed up in a bad way. Basically, what they did was like Fallen Angel, that like the story of like the girl who goes to Hollywood to get to get.
Wait, you're saying this was her first bad day in Bangkok?
Well, maybe it was, but so yeah, you instead of Hollywood, just replace that with Bangkok, and that's her.
Yeah, here's the story.
Been around a while.
Here's Jack, give us the story.
Yeah, I'm trying to give you the fucking story. So the Sherry Rose, who played the female love interest, she was a last minute replacement. She had been in No Retreat, No Surrender 3. So the producers knew her, and everyone knew her, the writer, all these guys, right? And she was last minute replacement because they had cast an actress to do the nude scene, to do the movie. And told the actress ahead of time to do the nude scene, and then that there was going to be a nude scene. And then when it came time to start filming, the actress said, I won't do the nude scene. So they scrambled and got in Sherry Rose, and Sherry Rose was like, yeah, fine, I'll do the nude scene. And she had been in Playboy and stuff. So the day of the shooting, they had shot 2 weeks worth. She goes, I'm not doing a nude scene. Which is why it was like a half day worth of negotiations between her and everybody else. To get the actual shot they sought of that. And that's why it's from a distance and it's so quick, because she had negotiated that. She had the power at that point. They couldn't just recast her. And of course the producers and the director wanted it in there because they considered it integral to the scene and the plot.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of Lloyd Kaufman who said in his How to Make low budget movies is, if you want a nude scene, you film the nude scene the first day.
Yeah.
Always film the nude scene the first day because actresses will back out of it once you've shot out of the stuff.
It does explain why she wore underwear into the hot tub.
For the body to body massage.
Yeah.
And apparently also like Lauren Avedon and her just hated each other. Like, and at one point he even just told her to shut up, and so from then on she spent the rest of the movie bad mouthing him to everybody on the set. So yeah, hard to believe. It seems like such a you know, everything seems so smooth when you watch.
Oh, chemistry! Just so much chemistry between the two of them. Just. It dripped off them.
Jack, I am glad that you shared that trivia, the your facts of fury about the backstory of Khan, because I had in my notes. So Khan takes her up to the room. She doesn't want to be there. Billy Blanks, I'm sure that Billy Blanks is not thrilled that there's this scene exists where he's really, really rapey.
yes, he is really rapey. He's a little rapey. I don't think really rapey.
She says, I'm going to go clean myself for you. And he says, you're not Thai. How do you know the custom? And oh, I'm yeah. like, how do you know the custom? Like, why is it surprising she does? You know.
He's half Thai. But come on.
Clearly his mother's from Indonesia.
Duh.
Yeah, I was very confused by that scene. Like, why is he so surprised that she would know the Thai customs?
I just assumed it wasn't his first rape.
That's fair. That's
oh my god. Billy Blanks is a major Christian fellow. So he would just apparently he showed up, did his lines, practice, and would go back to his hotel room and call his mother, call his wife, and then read from the Bible. So put that into perspective. You have to film the rapey scene.
You have to do a lot.
He show up, make up take a shit. Scene.
A lot of rough Bible reading for that.
Oh my god. Oh.
What do you guys think? Should we move into our scoring?
What about that final scene though? Like that set. It's the costume.
The set is great. I like love the masks scene. And
that whole section.
Like it's just classic. It's this beautiful thing that is so nonsensical as to why they're shooting it there, but why are there like a whole bunch of tribesmen?
I don't know.
Like, were they extras for the movie? Were they supposed they actually belong there?
He spends the time he infiltrates the snuff film, but by being good enough at kickboxing that they cast him in an apparent real film, only to turn out that real film is actually a snuff film. But a snuff film with a massive budget, apparently, because
yeah. Well, again, they look like they're only like 5 minute films, and yet they went to a lot of effort.
Oh man! In this case, especially like the other one, the first one that they showed had like a car and stuff like that, and okay, I mean that was one thing, but this one, I mean, they built an entire bamboo cage that was booby trapped with like bungee stakes off the top. I think
and
it was probably
costumes,
like fucking alligators, and
the costumes are so some sort of Thai gods. Like one is an actual Thai god that the Jake Donahue character was dressed as, and the other is the demon that God defeated, that Khan is dressed as, and they're amazing. And that scene, by the way, took 2 weeks to film.
No, but
well, that doesn't surprise me.
If you're working on a low budget movie like this, that's where you put the money. I mean, that scene is awesome.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I mean, I wouldn't want to see money in this put into this film anywhere else. If it meant anything from that scene.
It does make sense, though, you know? I mean, if you're going to go big, then go big right at the end.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, from a reality point, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but...
Well, we're not going to... Sure. Yeah, I mean,
thankfully, we're not giving it that on reality.
Yeah, so Jim, let's get to the scoring. I can't wait to score this fucker.
All right. So for those who are new to the podcast, we rate the movie in five categories. Each category gets a score of 10 from each of the hosts. And if Brad would ever show up, I have to redo my math here to make it all work.
God, but, yeah, he just screwed everything up, didn't he?
Yeah, I'd redo all the charts. I had this all built in Excel so that it would just automatically do it, and then I'd redo everything for four people instead of five.
And he'll be on the next show, right?
I don't know. He hasn't been putting anything on Facebook. I have no idea what he's up to.
All right.
So anyway, all of these are about the enjoyment of the film and not at all about any kind of objective quality, because that's not what we're in the business of. So we're going to start. So schlock appeal is the first category. This is how the seemingly badness of the film actually makes it more enjoyable. Stan, let's start with you.
You know, I enjoyed this movie, and there was a ton of silly action and like bad acting, so that combined for a great experience. I'm not sure I'd want to watch it again for a while, so I'm not going to give it quite as high a total as maybe I should have. But the funny thing is that talking to you guys has made me bump my score up, because I've enjoyed talking about it maybe even more than watching it. So I was going to give it a 6, but now I'm going to give it a 7.
Nice. All right, Nick, it's over to you.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a 6 on this one. I mean, there are a lot of cheesy moments, but, you know, there isn't a pommel horse in the middle of a crazy person's village.
That's too bad.
Jack.
It would have been great if they did that. Yeah. See, I'm giving it an 8 because I think, like, the last movie we did was Gymkhana. And, like, as a movie, I think this one is a better movie, better made movie. But it's also not as good. But Gymkhana is that unintentionally bad. Whereas this one, I think they embraced the schlock. They knew that what they were making. They knew they were making a B movie and just went for it. And I think that was evident in that opening scene where he's kicking the little kid in the face 50 times with the with the penis POV camera. So I gave it an 8.
All right. I also came in at a 6 on this one, and it really, much like Gymkhana is brought up by the City of Crazies, King of the Kickboxers is brought up by the weird Indonesian tribes people who are watching Thunderdome. So it would be a lot lower if it wasn't for the weird third act of this, so I'll give it a 6. The next category is more heart than budget. So that is how this movie overreaches with what it has, but it improves the movie by its reaching. Stan, let's start with you.
Well, you said it, and I have it in my notes. Bangkok style Thunderdome stage with punchy sticks and a bunch of native warriors. You know, I mean, it's masks. It's the producers there always having a Thai girl on his arm, like, getting fed grapes. I mean, the rest was one thing, but the end alone just raised it right up. So I gave it a 6.
All right.
You know what? I think everyone involved with this film thought they were going to get an Oscar for it. hell, everyone was so incredibly earnest and lacked so much talent. Just bringing this into a beautiful, beautiful mess. This is going high. This is 7.
Jack,
yeah, I don't think it's a badly made film from that perspective. I mean, they obviously didn't have a big budget, but they didn't let that stop them from making that end scene and everything. I think that, like, it didn't have crazy special effects, but, like, it had good cinematography. It had these different things that I think that they really were like, we're going to make the best B kung fu movie we can. Like, you know, the most entertaining. I think we're going to make the most entertaining B kung fu white guy martial arts movie we can. And so I think it's an 8.
8, all right. I went a little lower than you. I went to a 6, and it is all about that third act set that is so weird and wacky, and the costumes in it. Like, that they didn't just do a kickboxer fight. They're in weird costumes. It's a snuff film cosplay. I love it. The next category is the WTF category, which is the parts of the movie that are there for no good reason but are awesome.
Well, it all comes down to the bamboo cage. It's the bamboo cage for me. Otherwise, you know, this is an action movie. I gave it a 4.
All right.
I think we got two different WTFs in locations. Of course, the cage. And I'm unsure why we even went to New York. So, you know, I'm going to go with a 6. Not, like, completely WTF, but enough WTF that it registers.
Actually, I'd like to question, because the captain shows up again with John Stroud's Asian character just before he fights. That is a WTF
in Thailand.
It's like, what the hell is
you? We're gonna loan you out, but we're also going to fly you like 14 hours.
Like, why did you need to be here? Because he's not going to listen to you anyways.
And back and off. Why you would a New that. York cop be, like, more suitable to...
Well, in fairness, well, I can get that because I've seen enough bad movies to know that you always, when you have the badass cop who doesn't listen, you always want to ship them off to the Philippines or Thailand or some other place like that where they won't do any damage to New York.
I like how the captain did phrase it like, I'm sending you on a holiday to Thailand to catch some snuff filmmakers. It'll be easy yes. compared to what you've been doing.
A little cakewalk to take a break after your undercover operation.
All right, Jack, I think it's your
This is where it falls off for me. Sorry, I mean, after giving it 2 8s in a row, I only gave it a 4 because it has a couple. But, I mean, I've seen so many movies with so many more stuff just thrown in for no reason. This thing has a couple of that, but most of it is just, you know, either cheesiness because they embraced it or bad because it was bad. But there wasn't a lot of there wasn't an excess amount of nudity for no reason. There was just nudity and it was clearly integral to the plot.
Very integral. Yeah. I don't think the story would make any sense without it. Take that scene out, the whole story thing, the whole thing falls apart.
It just falls apart. Falls apart.
I have. All right, Jeff. I actually there was a scene, the WTF moment for me. The set is so crazy, but it's an ongoing thing. The moment for me that was like, what on earth just happened? Is when they're attacked. The at the beginning of the film. There's a big, like, let's fight them with kickboxing, but let's also fight them with automatic weapons. Second, after the kickboxing. But the heroes are driving, are being driven in a little, what do you call it? It's like a little motorized.
Oh yeah, tuk-tuk.
Thank you. So in a little tuk-tuk, and the thing's got like a lawnmower engine in it. And they stop him, the guy runs off. They shoot this thing with an AR-15 or something, shoot it with an automatic weapon, and the thing explodes like it's made out of dynamite.
That's true. That was amazing.
Well, here's something interesting. Now, I've ridden in many of those in the time that I spent in India, and the funny thing is that almost every time I got into one, not 5 minutes into the trip, they had to stop to get gas. So I'm surprised that this one didn't have to like stop to get gas to fill up the little lawnmower, because obviously they must have for it to explode like that. He must have like just gotten a full tank of like hyper explosive.
That's called gas. Filmmaking. You don't have to like show that they got gas.
So I give it a 5 for the scooter made of dynamite. All right. Memorable moments. So this is similar, but these are moments you won't forget. The quotable lines, or just a scene that is so undeniably awesome.
Well, besides the end, the end is just special. But Billy Blanks' face will live on in my nightmares forever. Just like the, but overall, I'm giving it a 2.
Right.
You know what? I'm giving it a 4 just because this movie made me watch every Billy Blanks film I could get my hands on and be disappointed by every one of them.
Well, and in fairness, Nick, if it had been too memorable, you never would have been able to watch it 100 times.
Yeah, true. That's right.
It was my only video cassette.
That's awesome.
How many times did you pause that scene of Sherry Rose nude from a distance in that blurry VHS set?
I don't have the VHS anymore, if that answers your question.
That's actually a shame, because I would love to put that up in the post of like the box that says King of the Kickboxers.
And it was a clamshell. If you
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy. You know the one like the road warrior came in?
I do not. I don't.
Especially, no, I know what a clamshell is.
Actually,
without...
no. Oh, I get it.
Yeah,
oh,
I know what a clamshell is.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Jack, yeah. Go to you.
Oh, what the hell are we doing?
Moments.
I had seven.
Really?
Yeah. Number one, I had that line. The no fucking, just a cop, just a plain cop. I had the kid being kicked in the face over and over again from penis cam. I had the end. I had that moment where he's told he's going to Thailand or whatever, and he does that Stallone scream that. Like, I think this thing has had quite a few. I had seven.
Nice. That is slightly higher than what I gave it, which was a two.
Wow.
This movie does have what I think is the if I were gonna put a pin in something that is like that is the mark of a poorly constructed film. And as fun as this movie is, it does have that marker, which is a flashback that happens, that flashes back to scenes that were in the same movie you're still watching. And it has a flashback 18 minutes into the movie that flashes back to something that happened 5 minutes into the movie.
It's awesome.
It's always something that I love.
It's
I just love it.
Awesome.
Just in case you forgot,
it is like I know that's what I have when I see that in a movie. I know that it's time to settle back and just enjoy the ride.
Oh, that's good stuff.
All right, like, and then our last final category, crazy concept. How out there and wild the simple idea of this movie is that it exists.
For me, this one's kickboxer with a snuff film added in. I gave it a one.
It's actually really believable this movie exists. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's horribly believable.
I am not at all surprised that this is a movie.
Yeah, it's like, wow, it's a kickboxer movie. Ooh, boy.
It's like Kickboxer. What's the big twist? There's sort of a snuff film thing going on. Is that really important? No.
Yeah. You know what? I have to agree. It is sort of the generic brand of movie script. You know, if it came in a yellow box. So, yeah, two.
All right. You guys are just so hard on this. I think you guys are forgetting about... Okay, the overall plot you've seen before, but the execution of this plot is insane. The fight at the end, the old teacher who's actually 3 years older, the... Even how he gets into it, the way he just goes and beats up a bunch of people in the ring until they're like, hey, he's good. We should be in a snuff film. Like all of this. I think you guys are underestimating it. It's not at the highest I've ever seen, but I got a six.
A six, you say? All right. And I was a little more generous than Nick and Stan, but not by much. I gave it a three. As I said, I think it's not a terribly surprising movie that it exists. There is some cool stuff in it. So
it is awesome, but
I'm not saying it's not awesome.
It's not surprising.
I had a ton of fun watching this.
I mean, that's the thing, right? I loved the movie. Yep. I thought it was great. Conceptually, that's what we're talking about is like the concept of the story and that we've seen before. And does that make it a bad movie?
Hey, just because you've seen something 413 times before doesn't mean that this isn't an original take.
Well, as you could tell from the heated tones. So the five categories gives us each a score out of 50. I then plug this into the machine, and it gives us the score that will go into the Octagon, which is the ongoing chart of our search for the ultimate B-movie. This movie was rated highest by Jack, who clearly is going to watch this again tonight. 33 out of 50 for Jack. Next up was Nick, 25 out of 50, so a solid 50% there. I gave it a 22, Stan gave it a 20. And we also have six mystery modifiers each each season we'll have six modifiers that we're not saying in advance what they are. As they come up, we'll bring them up. So this had two of them. This movie is longer than 95 minutes, which takes a point away. This was just about 100 minutes, wasn't it?
99
minutes. Wow. 99. So it loses a point for being over 95 minutes. That is the sweet spot for a B movie, particularly VHS era. But it does get a point back because its stunt director or martial arts stunt director was of Asian descent. So it gets a plus one there and leaves a grand total of 50 out of 100 for King of the Kickboxers.
Did we not decide on a modifier on nudity?
It didn't make it into the final list, no.
No, we took that out for the... We talked about it, and I don't think I would give this a point for nudity. I don't think that qualified.
It almost should lose a point for, like, you know, just, like, such a tease.
Yeah, but no, yeah, we took it away because it's not as good a modifier, I think, as the Asian stunt coordinator or choreographer or director. Okay. So, yeah.
Because what links all 10 movies together this season in the White Dragon season is that these are all martial arts films with a white American lead in it.
Don't get me wrong. I would have given the film a 34. Some I would have found a way if there was better nudity. Like, I'm not saying nudity isn't always on my personal scale.
We know that. We know that.
Personal is. Yeah. So comes in. A distant second to Jim Cotta as the Octagon begins to get filled up with titles at two.
I mean, you know, in fairness for me, I believe that, like, I really enjoyed this movie. I had a great time watching it. I'm super glad that we did watch it, and I got a lot out, but it's still not up to Jim Cotta level for me.
Jim Cotta is going to be tough to beat.
It is going to be tough to beat. And will our next movie in episode 3 be enough to knock off Jim Cotta? Does anybody want to know what it is?
Everyone wants to know.
Well, you all know
I don't.
What it is.
I have no clue.
But but the truth is that it is really, we got part of the name of the season from this. It is American Ninja. Michael Dudikoff and American Ninja. This is the movie that kind of kicked off that whole American Ninja thing. And we're going to watch that one and get onto it for our next episode.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that.
We had to have a Michael Dudikoff. I think that was obvious.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, Michael Dudikoff, he's one of those guys that I know for a fact is going to appear many times in our Octagon. You know, I'm sure that Billy Blanks is going to come up a couple of times, maybe Lauren Avedon, but I know that Michael Dudikoff is going to come up a lot. So, what do you say, guys? We're pretty close to ready to wrap this one up. Check us out. What is that, Jim? Tell us about the Instagram.
Follow us on Instagram, and it is Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo is the Instagram account, and use hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo and tell us about your favorite B movie and independent and low budget grindhouse, true B movies from the early days of cinema, all of those things. Tag us, and we'd love to see what you're enjoying.
Well, unless anybody else has anything to say for Jim and Jack and Nick and, well, Brad, if he was here, and Stan, that's me. Thank you for listening to another episode of Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.